Well, I wonder as we begin to think about business in the book of Proverbs, what you would say is a Christian career, a career that Christians should take part in. Perhaps when you think of a Christian career, you think automatically of Christian ministry. So a pastor, a missionary, maybe you'd expand it a little more. Maybe someone who's a backroom staff for a mission organisation or something like that. Most of us, I assume, would expect that there's more to it than that. Perhaps we'd think about caring professions as being particularly appropriate for Christians. We might think about teaching and medicine and foster caring and all sorts of things that do really obvious goods in the world as a career. But what about business? Can a Christian work for a for-profit organisation? Can they run their own business? Can they create things and aim to make money as a result of them rather than just doing it for free? Well, I think you know that the answer is yes, that there's nothing wrong with making money and getting paid for your work. But you might wonder, well, why? And does God have any interest in how we go about our business life? What does God want you to do as you walk into the office each day? Do you just leave your faith at the door and make sure that some of the money that you earn is given to the church? Do you need to just keep going through the day in the hope that every so often you'll get one little evangelistic opportunity with a friend or a colleague? Or is there a way to serve God by making products, advertising them, and selling them? Well, Proverbs was written in a day where most businesses were a lot more small scale than the businesses we have today. Families would farm or they would create items and sell them for a profit. Even the son of a king would have owned land and sold his produce, or at least got his servants to do so. So pretty much everyone in society was involved in some kind of for-profit business. So how were they to do that in accordance with the will of God? Well, tonight we're going to discuss seven principles for a Christian businessman or businesswoman. And I hope that it will help you if you're going into work on this Monday morning to be able to think of how you can do so in a way that's glorifying to God. And if you've got a job that's slightly different from business, I hope it would still be useful too. So we're going to go through them. And the first principle is this: a Christian businessman or woman is honest. A Christian is not going to be involved in deceptive practices to make a profit. The big issue in Solomon's day was honest scales. There are four proverbs about this issue, but let me read 11:1, which we read before, again, to give you a flavour. It says, "The Lord detests dishonest scales, but accurate weights find favour with him." I wonder if you were making a list of all the things that God says in the Bible he detests and all the things that find favour with him, whether you'd ever get to honest scales on that list. But it was important to God. Why was this? Well, imagine you go down to the market and you want 12 pounds of wheat. You put it on the scales and you pay the amount you need for 12 pounds, but actually the scales are dodgy. And so what you've really bought is 11 pounds of wheat. You probably wouldn't even notice. But the guy selling the grain, if he does that again and again and again, well, his grain is going to go a lot further and his money is going to increase. There were no trading standards agencies back in those days. You could easily get away with it. But whilst you may have not been caught by the government, God cared about it. That lie mattered to him. Accurate weights found favour with him. Another proverb talks about moving boundary stones, which is a similar issue. Proverbs 22:28. "Do not move an ancient boundary stone set up by your ancestors. God had allotted land for each of the people. From that land, they were to earn their income. But of course, the bigger your land is, the more income you can get. And the only thing marking off one piece of land from another was these stones. It could just so happen that you picked it up and moved it a few steps to the right on one day, and then a few days later, you move it again. Perhaps if someone dies and they're not paying attention, you might move it even further. And so be able to increase your land. It would be hard for someone to prove that you'd done that. But God knows, and he was going to judge that. And so Christians were not to do so, or followers of God. Now, I suspect most of us aren't tempted to go home and move our boundary stones or to get dishonest scales to use at work. But deception is always going to be a temptation when money is involved. Falsity is even easier these days, isn't it? Last week, I'm told that the band that reached number one on Spotify was an AI-generated band. The lyrics, the music, and the band photos were all AI-generated. There was no real person at the other end. And it shows just how easy, in our day and age, it is to be able to pass off someone else's work as your own. Now, I don't think it'd be wrong to use AI if you were honest about it. You could easily pass off AI work as your own work and charge accordingly. Now, less dramatically, there could be other ways to be false in your workplace. For example, you could work at home for what you are paid as an 8-hour day, but Skype off when nobody's watching. You could use cheap materials and claim that you've used the best materials and charge accordingly. You could overlook certain things on your company account, hoping it will go unnoticed by the tax man. I'm sure in each place of work represented here, you can think of ways that you could be dishonest in a way that would profit you personally or the company. And that might have a short-term benefit. But in the long term, you and your company would pay the cost, ultimately having to stand before the judgment seat of God for those actions. A Christian business person is honest. Secondly, a Christian business person is not gullible. There are some innocent people in the world who behave with honesty towards others and also expect that everyone else in the world is going to be honest with them in return. Now, you may think that's a Christian way to view the world, but actually, it isn't. We know that this is a fallen world, that there are sinful people in the world, and therefore, we know there are going to be lies. And so, we act accordingly. We are not gullible. Proverbs 20, verse 14 takes us down to the marketplace, and we get a familiar sound. You can imagine it being some sort of Cockney gavner who's saying this. "It's no good, it's no good," says the buyer, then goes off and boasts about the purchase. We can all imagine that. Two people haggling over a goat or whatever they haggled over in ancient Israel. And this guy points out all the non-existent problems with the goat. "Oh, well, he's got a spot there, his ears a bit wonky." And then he goes down the road, proud of the deal that he's got. A gullible person could give in. "Oh, yes, there are those problems there." But of course, it's all a lie. It's all a ruse to get a good price. Now, a Christian would never behave like this because they're honest. They wouldn't lie about what they're buying. But a Christian also shouldn't be so gullible that they fall into the lies of everyone else around them. No, a Christian needs to know how the world works. As Jesus put it to his disciples, we need to be as innocent as doves, but as wise as serpents. Now notice that what he loses here is profit. And we might think that a Christian would not be bothered about getting a fair price, but that's simply not true. If you've done good, honest work, you deserve to be paid for that good, honest work. Again, you can probably think of examples of this in your place of work where you could be gullible to someone trying to haggle down the price. Perhaps a graphic designer might be told they could put together a logo of that standard on Canva, but they're not gullible enough to undersell the work. Or a buyer might be dealing with someone claiming tremendous costs for goods, knowing all the while that the person is on the other end of the phone or the Zoom call, crossing their fingers, hoping that they'll get away with it. Or a church might assume that a mission organisation's spending is quite above board and don't do the due diligence to find out whether that's true or not. That level of gullibility isn't a virtue. We're not to assume that everyone in the world is innocent. We're to accept that the world is fallen, that there will be errors, and to think wisely accordingly. A Christian business person is not gullible. So a Christian business person is honest, not gullible, and thirdly, hires well. It's very practical, isn't it? Did you know that God cares about your hiring process at your company? Well, he does. Proverbs 26, verse 10, says this, "Like an archer who wounds at random is one who hires a fool or any passerby." God does not want his people to just hire at random. I think without this, I'd probably assume it was quite godly. Oh, who cares if the person's not capable enough? We're going to be generous. We're going to give them a living wage. No, says God, it's like an archer firing at random. Now, if you fire at random, sometimes you're going to get a direct hit by accident. But there's also a chance of hitting a tree or a passing person or anything else. No, there should be a deliberateness, a deliberate attempt to not hire a fool. Now, remember, of course, a fool isn't just someone who's uneducated. A fool is someone who fails to have the right character. Now, you can't expect to only hire Christians in your business, but you could make sure that the people you hire for your company or for your place of work is someone who isn't lazy, who is honest with money, who has good people skills. A fool in a workplace can cause you no end of trouble. Yes, they may not fear God and keep his commandments, but there can be someone who is a good worker who is not a believer, and there can be plenty of people who are foolish and outwardly claim to believe. At the moment, there's too few jobs going around. I've heard a few of our young people saying that they're looking for summer jobs while they're home from uni and they can't find one. There are good, capable people out there looking for jobs, and it's a good thing to be able to provide work. It can give people a sense of purpose. It gives them money to support their families so that they're not dependent on others to give to them. We should look to employ if we have the ability to do so. However, we shouldn't just hire any old fool. We should look to appoint someone who's going to do the work well. What's the point of spending 30 grand a year on a lazy man who will do the minimum amount of work? What's the point of hiring an angry customer support member who will lose you business as they lose their rag with every single person they get on the phone with? What's the point of giving an opportunity to someone who is dishonest, who will end up getting your business into trouble as they break laws the company must keep? A Christian business person hires well. So a Christian business person is honest, not gullible, hires well, and is also wary of credit. I wasn't quite sure how to put this, so I'm not sure that that's the best description, but you'll hopefully understand as we go through. It kind of comes back to the gullibility thing. A friend comes to you and says, look, I'm trying to get a loan, but because of my income, they're saying I need someone else to put up security for it, someone else to underwrite the loan. It might sound like it's a very kind thing to do, but Proverbs says, don't do it. There are three occasions where it talks about this. We read one of them before. Whoever puts up security for a stranger, sorry, this is 11:15, will surely suffer. But whoever refuses to shake hands in pledge is safe. It comes back to this gullibility issue, doesn't it? It's easy to put up security to underwrite someone's loan than actually to pay. And you're depending on the other person to be financially sensible enough not to get a loan that's beyond their ability to pay. It's not worth the risk to you and your family to do this. If you want to make a gift, feel free. The book of Proverbs would encourage you to give generously, but don't gamble with somebody else completing their loan if you can't pay the price that you are undersigning for them. And the reverse side of this is not that you don't ever ask for security. Interestingly enough, again, it's assuming that we're living in a fallen world. Proverbs encourages you to take a deposit. So there's two examples. I'll go for Proverbs 20:16, where it says, take the garment of one who puts up security for a stranger. Hold it in pledge if it is done for an outsider. The point being there, if somebody is paying for someone who doesn't live in your community and you're not going to be able to chase down if you need to get their money, or take their coats just to make sure that they're going to pay you back. Now, how do we broaden this principle? Because we live in a much more complicated financial world than the ancient world was. Credit makes the business world go round, and international businesses sometimes have to work on the basis of credit and debit. I think the key principle is this: whether personally or for a company, act within your means. Don't gamble on the basis of credit. Always consider the effect on your family or your company. Don't promise money you can't afford to pay, and don't accept promises from people who you've got good reason to doubt that they will pay. I understand now that with banks and financial authorities, you've got a lot more guarantees. There's a lot more chance of chasing down that person from out of town. And so it doesn't matter, for example, whether you're selling your house to someone who can pay in cash or someone who pays with a mortgage. You know that the lender will fulfill on their behalf. But the point is this: never promise money you can't afford to lose, nor accept promises you doubt the other person will fulfill. It's about not being gullible and recognizing we live in a fallen world where people will make foolish and sinful mistakes time and time again. How that applies to bigger businesses, those of you in those positions will have to think through. I've never been in that place myself, so maybe you'll have more understanding. So a Christian businessman is honest, not gullible, high as well, is wary of credit, but he's also generous. Proverbs 11, 24 to 26 gives us a list of different ways that a Christian could be generous. One person gives freely, yet gains even more. Another withholds unduly, but comes to poverty. A generous person will prosper. Whoever refreshes others will be refreshed. People curse the one who hoards grain, but they pray God's blessing on the one who is willing to sell. Now, don't think because Solomon is wise and he's warning against us underwriting loans that he's encouraging all Christians to be misers. No, in fact, generosity is not only a good Christian virtue, it's often quite a wise thing to do, even in business. Now, we've got to be careful with proverbs like this. They're not saying what some prosperity preachers have said, that if you put £1,000 in the collection plate, good news, in a few weeks' time, you'll get £2,000 in your bank account. It doesn't work exactly like that. These are proverbs. These are general principles. They are not absolute promises. But there is a sense that God has made the world such that generosity often leads to prosperity in a way that you might not expect. You can even see that just in the practical way that businesses work. Let me give you a real-life example. I go to my garage to fix my car. And the mechanic there finds out that there's something incredibly small wrong with the car. And I go to pay the bill and he says, I'm not going to charge you for that. I barely did any work. Well, of course he could charge me for it. He's done the man hours. I've got my card ready to pay. But no, he generously says, I'm not going to charge you. Now in the long run, that is a much better business decision, isn't it? Because who am I going to go to next time that I have a problem with my car? I'm going to go to that friendly guy who didn't charge me the last time in the hope that it's going to happen again. I know he's not going to rip me off. I've sacrificed a small amount of money in the short term short-term money, long-term money. And that's the way it often works. If we're generous people, then we have the respect of others. Now, generosity doesn't mean giving away for free, always. Obviously, as Christians, we love to give to the poor. We love to share with one another. But that doesn't mean that we can't sell for a profit. Verse 26 describes someone hoarding grain and someone else being willing to sell. So imagine the scene. It's a famine, and most people's harvests have gone poorly. People are not able to put bread on the table. Yet, for whatever reason, Old Bill, a very Jewish name that is, Old Bill has got grain to spare. What's he going to do? Well, he might be tempted to hoard it and say, well, everyone else is going to starve, but my family are going to be absolutely fine. Or he might choose to massively inflate the price because of supply and demand and get a huge profit for himself. But again, that's short-term thinking. Everyone's going to curse such a man, aren't they? What he may gain in short-term profiteering, he will lose in the long-term respect of the community. But notice that with the person who gives to the community, it doesn't say they pray God's blessing on the one who gives freely. They say they pray God's blessing on the one who is willing to sell. He's still getting a fair price. After all, he did the hard work to fill up his barn. A worker deserves his wages. Generosity isn't just giving away for free. It can be selling the goods you have with others for a fair price. Much in our culture is about the short-term bottom line. How can we undercut each other? How can we make all the profit margins? But we can also be generous by sharing what we have at a reasonable price for the benefit of others. Yes, sharing can be just putting money in a collection box, but it can also mean working hard and selling your product at a fair price. So a Christian businessman is honest, isn't gullible, hires well, is wary of credit, is generous, and also a Christian business person profits by hard work. Everyone wants to get money easily, don't they? The internet is full of get-rich-quick schemes. I don't know what it is about being a pastor that all of the YouTube adverts seem to think that I want to find some dodgy way to make money, but there's always a few adverts. But the reality is that none of those things are successful. You can't get rich quick unless you get rich with sinfulness, which means you have to work hard. We're going to do a whole sermon on laziness later on in Proverbs, whenever we get around to it. But let me speak on how laziness speaks to business opportunities with two Proverbs here. First is Proverbs 14:23, which says, "All hard work brings a profit, but mere talk leads only to poverty." All hard work brings a profit, but mere talk leads only to poverty. It's easy to talk big, isn't it? Many a person has said, "I'm going to start my own business," but they haven't wanted to go through the hard work of ringing up clients or fulfilling orders or making a product or finding good staff. It's easy to talk about something, but the world works by hard work. Now, again, we've got to understand this is a proverb. There are, of course, some people who work really hard and there's problems in society that mean that they're not able to succeed. But generally speaking, people that make a profit, people that succeed in business, are those that work hard. It's just the way the world goes round. And an example of this is given early in Proverbs 14. Proverbs 14, verse 4, it's quite an unusual one. It took me a while to figure out what on earth it was talking about. It says, "Where there are no oxen, the manger is empty, but from the strength of an ox comes abundant harvests." What does that mean? Well, I think what it means is this. If you don't have an ox, you've got an empty manger. And it's a lot easier to have an empty manger because you don't have to clear out that manger every day. You don't have to sweep away all of the straw and all of the filth. It is a pristine manger because it is never used. However, while you may have that short-term problem, short-term solution, that short-term benefit of a nice tidy manger, a nice tidy stable, you're going to have to work a lot harder on your fields. But if you have an ox, well, he's going to increase your ability to work. You'll have an abundant harvest. So yes, the ox is going to give you more work. You're going to have to muck him out, but he's also going to give you a greater harvest. It's hard work in the short term for benefit in the long term. The point is, don't just take the easy option. Take the one that will have the biggest long-term effect. I'm sure you can think of other examples. So a contemporary farmer might find that tractor maintenance is a big part of their job now. But it's better to have a tractor that you have to take to the mechanics every so often than have to do it by hand. It can be annoying to go on a course to learn new skills in the short term, but in the long run, it might give you a better job. It may create a lot of work to teach somebody else to do the task that you do yourself, but in the long run, you'll be freed up to do more. The point is, there are times when it's easier to be lazy, but there's long-term consequences for good if you do the hard work. Now, again, I'm sure you can think of particular examples in your life where a short-term decision might not actually be the best for the long term, where a bit of short-term hard work will reap benefits in the long run. Next one, a Christian businessman protects his employer. Proverbs 27, verse 18. Another one that's hard to understand on the surface. It says, "The one who guards a fig tree will eat its fruit, and whoever protects their master will be honoured." Let's start with our fig tree. That fig tree might be attacked. And by attacked, it probably means someone might come along and take the figs off and eat them. I remember when I went to France once. We were riding our bike through a lovely vineyard. We just stopped by the side of the road. We probably shouldn't have done this and just grabbed a cluster of grapes and went on our way. And you can imagine that happening in the ancient world. So people had to protect their prunes and their figs and whatever else to make sure that ruffians like me didn't take them away and eat them. He's going to protect his fig tree because that's where his profit comes from. But for others, their source of income is the master. And I imagine that's the real focus of this proverb. A servant rises or falls depending on how his master is doing. So he's going to protect him. Now, in Proverbs land, in ancient Israel, I'm pretty certain that would be literally defending from robbers and assailants. But you can widen that out, can't you? How many of us must work to protect our employers or the company we work for? Think of a secretary working for a director. He might see a mistake that his boss has made that could put him in a lot of trouble. Oh, there's a lightning, okay. As long as we're not about to explode, that's good. I really wish I was preaching something more hellfire and damnation with that going on. Repent now, ye sinners. Oh, dear. He might see a mistake his boss has made. He can correct that. He might see his boss's time is being frittered away with pointless meetings and cut them off. If you've hitched your wagon to a particular man or woman or to a particular company, you better make sure that they're doing well. There weren't many large organisations in these days that you would be attached to a person rather than a company. But many of us have to think about what's best for our company. Work in Morrison's and there's a clean-up on aisle 4, and you're going to do that because it's going to make Morrison's look good if our floor is clean. That's the way that we're to think. We're to think not just selfishly, but we're to think of the collective for our bosses, for our employers. Do the best we can. Christians should be great employees. I remember a friend who lived in Birmingham, and there was reputations, probably slightly inappropriate, but there was this reputation that people from a certain community, and I won't say which it is, were the hard workers, that you really wanted someone from that community to work for your business. And my friend said, wouldn't it be great if Christians had that reputation? If businessmen were saying, you really want to get a Christian working for you because they will serve the company no end. So, we're going to have another big bang. Oh, a bit further away, okay. So, a Christian businessman is honest, not gullible, hires well, is wary of credit, generous, profits by hard work, and protects his employer, and finally, he rejects dishonest wealth, or she rejects dishonest wealth. We've mentioned a few ways here that someone could sin and profit from that. Dishonest scales, hoarding, and the like. But of course, there's a thousand ways to profit from evil. And as ever, the temptation is going to be short-term gain. But Proverbs challenges to look at the long-term and see the danger of dishonest wealth, particularly in light of God's kingdom. Let me just quickly run through four Proverbs. So this gets to the heart of how Proverbs thinks about business. Proverbs 10:2, ill-gotten treasures have no lasting value, but righteousness delivers from death. Much better to be delivered from death than to have a short-term ill-gotten treasure. Proverbs 11:18, a wicked person earns deceptive wages, but the one who sows righteousness reaps a sure reward. You reap what you sow. If you sow wheat, you'll reap wheat. And if you sow righteousness, you'll reap righteousness. Proverbs 13:11, dishonest money dwindles away, but whoever gathers money little by little makes it grow. Rather than going for the get-rich-quick scheme, just little by little will bring security. And Proverbs 16:18, better a little with righteousness than much with injustice. Although Proverbs is more than happy for you to have a healthy bank balance, it says if you've got to choose between being poor and being righteous, choose being righteous every time. Now, it's easy to say in church, yes, of course, I will always pursue righteousness above wicked gain. But when temptation comes, it can be difficult to make the right decision. I heard recently of a Christian novelist who'd written with a secular publisher, and he was being nominated for a award, a big award in contemporary fiction. And he got rung up by the committee because they'd found out this dirty secret. He was an evangelical Christian. And they said to him over the phone, "We want to give you this award, but you can't have it if you're an evangelical Christian. So we just wanted to check, are you an evangelical Christian or not?" And the man said as he was talking about it, "I never thought that it was going to be so black and white." But that's what he had to do. He could have thousands of more book sales with this award, or he could stand for what he believed in. And thankfully, he chose to do the right thing. I'm sure there are many others who haven't. There are many of us who will face those kind of temptations. And they rarely come with months of preparation. They just come out of the blue. Bam! Are you going to be standing up as a Christian or are you not? Your job's going to be on the line. What are you going to do? Well, this is why the Proverbs are so memorable. Because you can take them with you in your day-to-day life. And think to yourself, well, better a little with righteousness than much with injustice. I'm going to choose righteousness, whatever the cost. Well, as we close, I have the interesting job of trying to relate talking about business to the Lord's Supper. But actually, it's not that hard. Paul's often misquoted as saying that money is the root of all evil. That's not actually what he said. He said the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. If we love money more than we love righteousness, more than we love God, then we will choose wicked ways time and time again. We must love righteousness. Money can be subservient to true spiritual wealth, but it must always be subservient. It must always serve God's ends, not selfish ends. But if we look at ourselves, I'm sure all of us can think of times in our work, in our own lives, where we've made a decision which gets us money quick rather than righteousness. But what a great example Jesus was. He had the riches of heaven, more wealth than you can possibly imagine. And yet he was willing to sacrifice that to come to earth, to do good, honest work as a carpenter for many years before working hard in poverty, ending with the ignominy of the cross, choosing, like he asked us to choose, righteous poverty over sinful wealth. It's because of his righteousness in all things that we are saved. Once we recognize that, once we recognize our sin is paid for, we should want to follow his example. Yes, in the way that we behave at church. Yes, in the way we behave in our families, but also in our working life. And I bet you'll find out that people notice you're a Christian much quicker than you expected them to, because they'll begin to see that you don't value the same things they do. You value what is heavenly. Make sure that in your mind you're certain what you're living for, not money, but God's glory, and then make decisions in light of that.